Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Sabbe satta maranti cha maringsu cha marisare tate wahang marisami nati me eta sangsayoti. That's a gatha, a phrase of the Namo Tassa, which we chant at funerals, and it gives the indication that this particular talk today will be on the meditation on death. It's very relevant because, having gone to a funeral a couple of days ago and somebody else dying, it's certainly clearly in my mind. And Maranasati, the meditation on death, is one of the great meditations which the Buddha taught. It's something which is useful at this stage of our meditation retreat here, on this rains retreat. Simply because that when we bring to mind the fact that we could die at any time, even before this talk is over, even before the next sentence is over, even before the next breath is finished, to realize just how close we are to our own death is something which gives us a sense of perspective. That's why the chant was, all beings will die. Sabbe satta maranti cha maringsu cha marisare. They will die, I will die. Tate wahang marisami. Sort of, I will die, of that I have no doubt. Nati me eta sangsayo. And remembering that, recording that, gives our life a perspective. Not only our life a perspective, but it gives what we do on the meditation cushion, on a walking path, a perspective. Because we all know that when we try and develop our mind, that sometimes we're sitting there, and either we have got not enough energy, or if we have got enough energy, we misuse it and allow the mind to wander over all sorts of silly things, wasting our time, hours and days, months, even years, not really putting our mind to the task. And how can we actually put our mind to the task to create this natural effort without it coming from a sense of self? This is one of the great difficulties in meditation. The way I teach over here, as you all know by now, is to allow the effort to come naturally. The effort which comes naturally doesn't come from the sense of self wanting to get somewhere, because that type of effort actually creates restlessness and tension in the mind. That's where headaches and tightness in the body or in the head or wherever come from. Too much effort, too much trying to get somewhere. But then again, the opposite is the mind becomes slack and just drifts off. Last week I was saying how we condition the mind with this programming, telling yourself what you want to do, giving those instructions, clear instructions to the mind before you set off on the journey, whether it's a journey of walking meditation or the journey of sitting meditation or the journey of eating, whatever it is, the task which is before you. But another way of developing that energy is actually remembering, putting things in perspective, by remembering the imminence of death. Because you just bring that to your mind, the fact that all these other people die. Seeing your friends pass away, seeing even the person who died last night, apparently, a Thai person, was only 44. And that's much younger than some of the people here, so it's much younger than me. But those of you who are younger than 44, there's also people died 18, 15, 12, 10, certainly that now you're old enough to die. As soon as you're born, you're old enough to die. But now each one of you here is old enough to die. So that when we bring that contemplation to our mind, that our death is imminent, it can happen any time and any moment, it gives a perspective to what life is all about. What it does is actually it loosens many of the attachments which create those elusive rainbows which we chase in our meditation. When you realize that all of these plans, these photographs, these books, these essays, these letters to your friends, these journeys overseas, or these journeys to Sydney, these journeys to Singapore, even the journey back to your hut, may never happen. You may not get that far. It starts to put what meditation is in perspective. The thing is, the future is that uncertain. You don't know if you will be there to meet it, certainly not in this body. And if you bring up that recollection of death at the beginning of a meditation, you bring it up until it's very clear in front of you that you don't know, you cannot expect any more moments. You don't know when you're going to die, when this body is going to give up. You keep that contemplation again and again so close to the mind that the mind turns from the world, because it doesn't make any sense that we concern ourselves about tomorrow, when we know just how close we are to death today. All of our plans, which we waste so much time on, seem to be so stupid and pointless. All the plans we have to build buildings, meditation paths, kutis, even just to clean up this part of our hut or that part of our hut. What are we doing that for when we can die in a moment's time? Why do we worry about even our health, and just the doctor's appointment next week, or the dentist tomorrow? When you look upon death, I mean, what's the point? You're going to die anyway. Just leave those cavities there. What the heck? So what you're thinking is of the importance of the moment. When you think about death, much of the past and the future just become completely irrelevant. Much of the past, what one has done in one's life, how much of it has been really useful and purposeful when you're faced with the contemplation of death? So much of what we've done is just completely a waste of time when you think about death. Each one of you, after 5 years or 10 years, people will forget about you. 100 years, no one would probably know you even existed. So why all this struggle? All the arguments which consume your mind, they all disappear after a short while, especially when you die. All of your successes, your failures, your good points, your bad points, where do they all go after death? The death just washes away just so much which is irrelevant, which is basically just 100%, especially of what we usually fill our minds with. And what that meditation on death does, it brings you to this beautiful present moment, and it frees the present moment of so many things we call attachments. As you develop the contemplation on death, more and more and more, there's more things become just irrelevant, pointless, a waste of time, not really yours to worry about, somebody else's problem, not your concern. What you're doing is using the meditation on the death to let go of the world. At least let go of the world which is subject to death. All that is subject to death and subject to passing away is not worth clinging on to, is not worth worrying about, is not worth even thinking about. It's all going to die anyway, it's all going to go away from you, what's the point? All of your possessions, you're all going to have to leave them all. And your body, no matter how much you care for it, no matter how many times you brush your teeth, what's the point of it? It's all going to die. It's all going to just rot away. Many of you are already rotting away. And you can feel that, you can see that. And so as we think like this, it takes away our attachment to our body. An attachment to our bodily things. The realm of the five senses becomes something which is not attractive anymore. Something which doesn't concern us. Something which becomes an irrelevancy in the face of death. People aren't concerned about sweeping out their room or washing the dishes when they're about to die. They're not really concerned about how much money they have in the bank when they're about to die. Not really concerned about all of these things, about writing books or whatever. When we're about to die, We're just concerned about this moment. So you're about to die now. So be concerned just with this moment right now. It brings an immediacy. An immediacy is the way into the present moment awareness, the beginning of the meditation. Because the future and the past become just so uncertain, unworthy of our attention. It's all subject to death. It's all subject to passing away. Therefore, it's not our concern. When we do the death meditation thoroughly and completely, it's amazing just how many things one lets go of. It's amazing just how many what used to be our distractions just can't find a way into the mind. Or if they find a way, they can't find a hold in the mind anymore. Because these are all subject to death. These are all in the realm of death. These all belong to what we call in Buddhism the king of death, Mara. Nothing to do with us. They can all pass away. So when we remember that death, our body is just something which doesn't concern us. Our future, our past doesn't concern us. And then we can go closer to in the moment, the present moment. We go closer into the breath. This is, the breath is, used to be for many, many centuries, I suppose, used to be the sign of life. When you stop breathing, you're supposed to be dead. So this breath is where you find out where life and death exist. When the breath stops, there's a potential death there. And if the in-breath begins again, it's life. And if the next time, it might be the last time it stops. It just breathes out and never breathes in again. One day it will be like that. So you should watch your breath to wait and be prepared for the time when that last breath goes out and the next breath doesn't come in anymore. You're just watching this whole process, the edge of death. And hopefully, because you're watching that edge of death, the breath, watching it just when it finishes on the out-breath, and seeing if this is death come at last. So you watch the in-breath, if it's going to come, it's come. Maybe this is your last breath then. You're always waiting, always ready on the edge of your death. And with that type of recollection, it's amazing just how difficult it is to wander off and start thinking about food, start thinking about sex, start thinking about travel, or start thinking about the monastery over there somewhere where you're going to go to next. All those things become complete irrelevancies. You're doing the practice right now. Death is like taking hold of you by the scruff of the neck and just pulling you in the present moment. Look, you stupid monk, nun, novice, anagaric, or whatever. Look, this is where you should put all your attention, into the now. Next moment can be too late. You don't know how many more moments you've got. So keep your attention right here. All that other stuff doesn't make any sense anymore. Whenever you wander off, why do you wander off? Why can't you just stay with the meditation object? It's a valid question. And if ever my mind wanders off, I ask why. Investigate and find out the reason. You find out there's two reasons why one wanders off. One is because one is not content where one is. Or if one is happy where one is, one thinks one will be happier somewhere else. The grass on the other side of the fence, looking greener. The next moment, or the future, sometimes looking better. You should know by now that if you aren't content in a moment, you move away. But if you are content, but you think something else is more worthwhile, then again you'll move. By doing the meditation on death, nothing seems better than this moment. Nothing seems more worthwhile than this moment. Just all those things which would pull you away don't pull you anymore. What's the point? I'm going to die. Thinking like that, no one can completely let go and get into the deep meditations. There's that old story of the Emperor Asoka's brother who was not at all interested in the Dhamma. Was only interested being the brother of an emperor, of enjoying himself with the pleasures of the five senses. And no matter what the Emperor Asoka or the great monk said, the emperor's brother would just indulge day and night, day and night. So the Emperor Asoka had to try and teach him meditation on death. And he did it in a very beautiful way. He took his bath, and having taken his bath, he took all his robes off, the royal insignia, and he arranged for his brother to be walking past the bathhouse with one of the ministers. And the minister, in on the plan, asked or encouraged the emperor's brother, "Why don't you try on the royal robes, the crown, the scepter, whatever the emperor wore? Why don't you just try it on for size?" And the brother said, "I can't do that, it's against the law. You can be executed for doing things like that." But the minister said, "Don't worry, no one will see you. The emperor's in his bath. Put it on," because, appealing to the man's vanity, when the emperor dies, they'll probably appoint you as the emperor. And so the brother put on the emperor's robes. All is set up, of course. The moment he put on the robes, the emperor appeared with the guards. Seeing his brother wearing the emperor's robes was a capital offense. He said, "Even though you're my brother, you will have to die. I can't just make special rules just for my family." No matter how much the brother pleaded, the emperor said, "You will have to die." "But," he said, "seeing as you're my brother, seeing as you want the throne and enjoy the powers of an emperor so much, for 7 days I'll give you all the pleasures and perks of being an emperor. You can enjoy the harem, you can enjoy the best food and the best music for 7 days, and after 7 days we'll execute you." And after 7 days, when the time of execution came, the brother came before the emperor. And the emperor said, "For 7 days did you enjoy those pleasures of the harem, the sex? Did you enjoy the great food? Do you enjoy the music and entertainment?" And the poor man said, "I could hardly sleep, let alone enjoy all of that stuff." "Why?" "Because I was going to die. I was afraid of death. Now it's come. Please spare me." And of course the emperor smiled and said, "I'll never kill you. This was just telling you a story, giving you an instruction. You're about to die. Not by my hand, but by cause and effect, by your karma. How can you enjoy the pleasures of the senses when you know that one day you're going to die, whether it's 7 days or 7 months or 7 years? How can you enjoy yourself when you know that you're about to be executed? You've all got a death sentence. Your huts are all on death row in this monastery. Please remember that. Your time is ticking away. One more day is one more day closer to your funeral." When you think like that, it gives a sense of immediacy. And just like the Emperor Soka's brother, just enjoying pleasures of the senses don't make any sense. There's no any reason for it anymore. Attachments, the things which usually fill one's mind, doesn't make any sense. Even sleeping, just like the emperor's brother, could hardly sleep at night when he knew he was going to die. If you were going to be executed tomorrow morning, would you be able to sleep? So knowing, recognizing the fact of death, reflecting on it, gives you enormous amounts of energy. That energy is good energy. It's the energy which comes naturally when you understand the true predicament one is in. One has been born, and this is the karmic result of being born. And recognizing that, it's very easy, as one starts meditation, to get focus very quickly. Sloth and torpor disappear when you remember death. You really bring it up very close to you. Sensory desire disappear. Ill will. What's the point of ill will when you're about to die? All these hindrances seem to be vanquished when one really gets into the death meditations. As you know, that one can do that death meditation on the walking path, as Venerable Ajahn Chitamala used to do, and I can't do better than that, was to, as you're walking, your left foot say, "I will die." As you walk with your right foot, "That's for sure. I will die. That's for sure. I will die. That's for sure." Backwards and forwards on your walking path. Do that in the morning when you first wake up. "I will die. That's for sure." That will soon wake you up and take away the sloth and torpor. Or on a sitting. When you're sitting, the breathing in, "I will die." Breathing out, "That's for sure. I will die, that's for sure." You're programming the mind, because the mind doesn't want to see this thing, because at first it's unpleasant. That's why most people in the world have this terrible phobia of death. They're in denial about the truth. What actually happens the more you practice death meditation? The more you go through this barrier, this phobia, you get past the denial, you see the truth, and it's not as bad as people present it to be. Because once you start getting into the death meditation, it brings immediacy, it brings energy. And that sense of immediacy and energy is a source of happiness, a sort of joy. It's why that sometimes the people in wars, because they know that death can happen any time, they've got different priorities in life. They're alive, they're alert, they have energy, they have mindfulness, they're doing unwholesome things. But that's one aspect of the battlefield soldier's life, which they quite like. The alertness, the awakeness, being there. And this is what you can do without having to face bullets or explosives. I will die, that's for sure, I will die, that's for sure. One really gets into it, one gets huge amounts of energy coming up. Clarity of mind. Purpose. People with purpose have energy. But that energy and that purpose is putting you right into the present moment. You know that's the only escape from death. That's the only reality you have. That's the only thing which makes any sense, the present moment. And all this, the words, sort of seem to be lost in the silence of death. You watch the breath come in and go out, and it's so easy to do. Because this may be your last one. And you're not trying to get anywhere or go anywhere or get anything. This is all part of the kingdom of death. It doesn't belong to you. So you're trying to just to hold on to whatever doesn't belong to death. And what doesn't belong to death is the mind. It doesn't belong to death. It belongs to cessation, to rise and fall, but not to the death of the body. So you're focusing on that which doesn't die when the body dies. That's why reflecting upon death turns you onto the mind and away from the body. Death meditation is a body contemplation. It does the same purpose as body contemplation or body awareness. It turns you off the body, away from the body, and the world of the body, the world of things, possessions, the world of the five senses. It gives you nibbida, this revulsion, turning away, repulsion from the world of the five senses and the world of the body. You get repelled from this, pushed away, because that body doesn't make any sense, it's not important anymore. The world, which we describe by the five senses, doesn't make any meaning anymore. It's going to die, it's the realm of death, it doesn't belong to us. So the result of that, when it becomes very clear, and very deep inside, is a letting go. Even in the sutta, which we're just chanting, the fire sermon, you see the same process from nibbida, from turning away after seeing the truth, seeing things they truly are. It comes viraga. Viraga is not just dispassion, it's a fading away of these things. As one gets nibbida towards the body and the world of the five senses, and the five senses themselves, because these are all subject to death. Seeing dies, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching is all subject to death. So it's not going to last. So we can give it away. We get nibbida towards it. What's the point of all these seeings and hearings and all these studyings, all these feelings? What's the point of it all when you're going to die? How much food do you need to eat? What's the point of nice food and unpleasant food when you're going to die? So that's all the realm of death. And one gets nibbida towards that realm by doing the death meditation. That nibbida creates a fading away of that world. By fading away, it means that your concern for it fades. And when your concern for that world fades, you spend less time in it. in fact disappears little by little. You spend more time in your mind and less in the world. More time in meditation, less in doing things out there. You play inside rather than outside where death lurks. The Nibbida creates the Viraga, and the Viraga, the fading away, creates the cessation. Or in the fire sermon, the Vimutti. You are liberated from the body and the realm of the five senses through death meditation. You actually die temporarily and get into jhanas. Often say that the way into a jhana is the same as the way of death of the physical body. When a person dies, floating out of the body usually, then going to the light, that light is the nimitta. When death happens, not the metaphorical death, what most people understand as death. What is death? The five senses stop working. The brain stops. And with the brain stopping, the five senses stopping, the thing which is left is the mind. And that mind is usually seen as a nimitta. The same way when you do breath meditation or this samatha meditation which I teach, once all of the five senses disappear, a nimitta comes up. That's the nature of this. It's the same process happening. Letting go of the body and the five senses, that's all. Why can't one die now and enter a jhana? It's because you're still playing around in that realm. Playing around in the realm of the five senses and the body. Thinking, controlling, doing, messing around. Don't have anything to do with it. That's called letting go. Nibbida, viraga, vimutti. You're free from that realm of the five senses. You die. And when you die, you enter the jhanas. This is the realm of mind. It's not the realm of death. Jitta is that which transcends the mortal body, which transcends death, the stream of consciousness which goes looking for a new life somewhere. Later on one will see just the impermanent nature of that jitta, the way it rises and falls according to conditions. It's a causal process, subject to cessation. But that's another talk. Here one is using the meditation on death to let go of the realm of the five senses, to let go of karma loka, the first of the three worlds, the three realms. You've got to die to that realm before you can enter the two other realms. Rupa loka, the realm of fine material, in other words the four jhanas, and the arupa loka, the realm of the immaterial attainments. You have to let go of these things. That's what one is doing. So the death meditation, you know it's working when the mind just turns away from the body and the five senses. Not just the body and the five senses, but the echoes of the body, the echoes of the five senses. That's what I call the thoughts and the last little attachments which stops you experiencing the nimitta, the light. Why is it that people can't get those nimittas? It's because you're still attached somewhere in this world of the five senses and the body. There's still something one is clinging onto. Because when all sight, sound, smell, taste, touch completely disappear, all their echoes fade away, you have to just have that one sense left, the mind sense, the pure jitta. And that always appears as a beautiful light in the mind, a nimitta. It's a reflection of the jitta. Of course, here you find, as I've often said, that nimitta is really dull and dirty. It means you've been not really being a good monk or a good novice or a good anagarika or a good lay guest or nun. Because the reflection of your mind, this is what you see. Sometimes it can be frightening if you haven't been keeping your precepts, you haven't been speaking well, and you haven't been keeping the rules of the monastery. But if you've been living a good life, that nimitta is pure and beautiful. Which is why at death, when a person does die, if they've been a good person, that's what they see, the beautiful nimitta. That beautiful nimitta gives them inspiration, gives them energy, gives them happiness. My goodness, if they're just an ordinary layperson and got a pure mind, that nimitta will draw them in and give them so much bliss and happiness they'll get reborn in the deva realm. But if that nimitta is really dark and dirty, they'll give them a sense of disgust, pain, and they'll drop into the lower realms. It's the way it works. You're actually seeing the results of your actions when you see a nimitta. So it's great to be able to develop Maranasati, the meditation on the death, to let go of this body and all its echoes, the senses, and all of its reverberations, and so they all completely die away, and so you get into nimitta land. And then eventually jhana. Because you're actually practicing how to die. You're learning the ropes of dying. How it all works. And not only do you know just even from that much, you should gain the, if you've got sharp wisdom, should be able to know that rebirth is a fact for a start. From your own experience, you can see how it works. So you know what the jitter is and what the five senses are. So much insight comes from this. But also you have no fear of death. You understand what it's all about. It also means that when your mind gets entangled with the world, with food, with sex, with entertainment, sight, sound, smells, taste, touches, music, or whatever, you know how to get out of that world. Just remember, death. This is all going to die. It's all pointless in death. So often, as I remember reading one story about a Thai girl who remembered her past lives, and this lifetime decided she's never going to marry. She's never really going to accumulate many things. Her whole life was just one of basically making merit, doing good. She had a good job, but it was a job where she did good things. Spent the time in the temple doing things, helping the Sangha, helping Buddhism. Because she could remember clearly her past lives. She could remember her death. And in that remembrance, it didn't make any sense to have a husband and have sex and have kids and have more attachments and have a house and have possessions and get into this trap of death. It was an inspiring story. And that's just an ordinary lay person. So why on earth is it that monks or novices or anagarikas or lay visitors to this monastery, why do we get into possessions? Into accumulating things? How much do you need? Just enough for the next day, that's all. Next day you get something else. It's beautiful the way we eat here. We don't need to store things. We don't store things because that's just following the way of death. It's buying into it. We want to use death to free ourselves of our attachments, to let go, to find that nimitta and enter the jhanas. So it's another way. Another path to developing the deep meditations, to creating samatha, to tranquility. When we really get into death meditation, and it brings us this sense of freedom, all that which is very sticky, it's like dissolving the glue, having this solvent which takes away the glue, which is sticking all these things to your fingers, to your body, to your mind. Death meditation dissolves all of that. And things tend to fall away. You're going to die any moment. So why worry about all these things? Your family, you're not going to be able to contact them. So why worry about where they're going to go, what they're going to do? You! Don't think about they're going to die. You're going to die any moment. So understanding that, we can let go. In some Christian traditions, they sleep in coffins at night. When they go in their coffin, they remember that they're going to eventually reside in that, their last kuti, their last bed, their last house. And they go to bed saying that maybe this is my night when I won't wake up anymore. It's amazing just how that allows you to let go, how that gives you dispassion for the world. And how just so many things in the world just don't have any meaning anymore. And how you become frugal. How you just don't get into using the telephone and fax and email and all this sort of stuff. Well, that sort of world becomes completely stupid, irrelevant. Why am I doing this? You're going to die. So let it all go. when you let it all go, your access to meditation is just so easy. Why is it you don't even spend enough time meditating? You're still doing things in the world of death. Absolute stupidity. You'll never get all your things out of the way. You'll never finish everything. Everybody dies before they're done. Before they're done with their business. Before they've settled all their affairs and done this and done that. So you'll never get all your business out of the way. If you try, instead you just say, well, what's finished is done. Just doing my duty I got away with today. That's enough. So don't do too much in the world. Even cleaning. There's sometimes that people sweep around their huts, they clean, 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 as if the whole purpose of living in a monastery is just to have everything spotlessly clean. The only thing which should be spotlessly clean in this monastery is your jitters, your mind. Your body, speech and mind. Clean that first, and then clean your heart afterwards. Trouble is, it's much easier to clean the heart than clean the mind. That's why people just pull off the real work. And still, one of my favourite stories is of that disciple of Mahakachana, who would sweep the vihara every day, all day, just working so hard. The vihara was spotless. And then Mahakachana took him aside and said, monk, you didn't ordain just to be a janitor. You ordained to become an arahat. Sweep in the morning, sweep in the evening, middle of the day, meditate. And he taught him meditation. In a short time, that person from a good family became completely enlightened, an arahat. And from that time on, the vihara was never as clean. There's always a bit of dust here and a few leaves there. But my goodness, there was another arahat in the world. That's why I like that story. It's so inspiring. I'm not saying, and please don't think, that, oh, we should be lazy in this monastery. I'm saying that if you can become an arahat, you don't need to do any sweeping anymore. If you become an arahat, you don't need to wash the dishes anymore. In fact, you probably will. But you realize what's important. Get the real job out of the way first, and get everything else out of the way afterwards. Too often people, they get this out of the way, that out of the way, they get the washing out of the way, they get the sweeping out of the way, they get this out of the way, and then they'll meditate. Get meditation out of the way first, and then do all that other business. By getting meditation out of the way, you're getting peace. Get jhanas before you worry about other things. We've built this monastery, I was going to say iron, it's probably fairly accurate, in order for people to get jhanas, and to get the enlightenment based on those jhanas. It's not just to have a good time, it's not just to impress lay people and get people coming along, say, oh, what a wonderful monastery, biggest monastery in outside of Asia. It's not the number of monks, it's their quality which is important. You'd rather have just one monk who's an arahat in this monastery than thousands of monks. One arahat. Two, three, four. But it's the quality which is important. So use Maranasati to get things in perspective. Maranasati just strikes at much of illusion. Especially illusion about the sensory world and the world of the body. It just makes more... It makes what is important first on your priority list, and what is not important just way back down there, not really important. Do lots and lots of Maranasati. If you get tired and bored, do death contemplation. Think of your death. Imagine yourself dying. Imagine yourself when you've died. In the past. See if you can even bring up just what you think may be a past life when last time you died. You're going to do it again. Make sure you get it right this time. Imagine what happens when you die. Just sit there and just go through the whole process of dying. Think about it, imagine it, feel it. So you know it very closely to yourself. It's something which is very clear to you. And then look what happens when it becomes so clear to you. Look at just how it gives a natural letting go. a natural peace, a natural energy, a natural effort. Just see just how one disengages from the world, how the world fades, how you just go into realms of mind, how nimittas can come up so easily the more you see the death of all that is seen, heard, smelled, tasted and touched. Play around with that, experiment, get into it. And then you'll find it enhances your meditation. In fact, it might be your key to the nimittas and the jhanas. Practice it a lot. Develop it while you're walking, while you're sitting, even when you're eating. When you're eating, you could die in the next mouthful. Do you want to die with a full stomach? Or do you want to die with a happy mind? So get into it to the point where the whole realm of the five senses fades away. You're just left with the realm of the mind. Meditation, jhanas, and eventually the liberation which comes from those jhanas. So that's a little talk this evening on Maranasati, using the contemplation of death to gain access to the deep meditations and to loosen the attachments to the body and the world.
Sūpatipanno bhagavato